Dr. Bob, a very grim case, sobered almost immediately and never took a drink to the time of his death in 1950. He and I soon commenced to work on numbers of alcoholics that we found at the Akron City Hospital. Almost immediately, there was a recovery, and then another. The first successful AA group had been formed. Returning to New York in the fall of 1935, this time with all the ingredients of recovery, another group soon took shape in this city. Nevertheless, progress of the Akron and New York group was painfully slow for the next few years. Hundreds of cases were tried, but only a few responded. Near the close of 1937, however, 40 were sober, and we began to be far more sure of ourselves. We saw that we had a formula which might, carried from one alcoholic to the next, eventually produce, change style, a very large number of recoveries. So came the question, how can our good news be spread to the millions of alcoholics in America and throughout the world? One basic answer seemed to be in a literature detailing our methods. Another need was for widespread publicity, which would bring great numbers of cases to us. By the spring of 1939, our society had produced a book which was called Alcoholics Anonymous. In this volume, our methods were carefully described. For the sake of greater clarity and thoroughness, the word-of-mouth program, which my friend Ebbe had given to me, was enlarged into what we now call AA's 12 Suggested Steps for Recovery. This was the backbone of our book. To substantiate AA methods, our book included 28 case histories. We hoped that these stories might fully identify us with readers at a distance, and they certainly have. As we had withdrawn from the Oxford group, our fellowship adopted the name of our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, as its own. The advent of that volume marked a historical turning point. In the 20 years since, this basic text has gained a circulation of nearly 400,000 copies. In 1986, distribution passed 6 million. Countless alcoholics have sobered with no other aid than reading this volume and practicing its principles. Our next need was publicity, and it was forthcoming. Holton Alsler, the noted editor and writer, printed a piece in Liberty magazine about us in 1939. The following year, John D. Rockefeller Jr. gave AA a dinner, which was widely publicized. The next year, 1941, there was a feature article in the Saturday Evening Post. This story alone brought us thousands of new people. As we gained size, we also gained in effectiveness. The recovery rate went way up. Of all those who really tried AA, a large percent made it at once. Others finally made it, and still others, if they stayed with us, were definitely improved. Our high recovery rate has since held. Even with those who first wrote their stories in the original edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, 75% of those finally achieved sobriety. Only 25% died or went mad. Most of those still alive have now been sober for an average of 20 years. In our early days and since, we have found that great numbers of alcoholics approach us and then turn away. Maybe 3 out of 5 today. But we have happily learned that the majority of them later return, provided they are not too psychopathic or too brain damaged. Once they have learned from the lips of other alcoholics that they are beset by an often fatal malady, their further drinking only turns up the screw. Eventually, they are forced back into AA. They must do or die. Sometimes this happens years after the first exposure. The ultimate recovery rate in AA is therefore a lot higher than we at first thought it could be. Another development of recent years has been a source of much comfort. In our early time, we could only deal with last gasp cases. Nothing could be done until alcohol had nearly wrecked its victim. But nowadays, we don't always have to wait while sufferers plumb these depths. We can now help alcoholics to see where they are headed before they hit bottom. In consequence, half of today's membership in AA is composed of far milder cases. Very often, the family, the job, and the victim's health are relatively unimpaired. Even potential cases are today approaching us. People who have suffered only a little. Here and abroad, too, our society is making much headway in crossing every barrier of race, creed, and circumstance. Yet, we must humbly reflect that Alcoholics Anonymous has so far made only a scratch upon the total problem of alcoholism. Here in the United States, we have helped to sober up scarcely 5% of the total alcoholic population of 4,500,000. The reasons are these. We can't deal with alcoholics who are too psychopathic or brain damaged. Many alcoholics don't like our methods and they look for an easier or different way. Millions still cling to the rationalization that their troubles are wholly due to their personal circumstances and are therefore somebody else's fault. To get the alcoholic, or the potential alcoholic, to admit that he is the victim of an often fatal and progressive malady is usually a very difficult matter. This is the big problem that still faces all of us, whether physicians, clergymen, families, or friends. However, there is much reason to hope. One of the greatest reasons for hope lies in what you physicians are already doing and may still do. Perhaps some of you may be asking, how can we help still more effectively? Here, we AAs can offer nothing authoritative, but we do feel we can make some helpful suggestions. Consider the family physician. Only a few years ago, the drunk was mostly a nuisance. The physician and the hospital could get him over rough hangovers. A little comfort might be afforded the family, but little else could be done. Now the situation is different. Nearly every city and hamlet in the country has an AA group. Yet all too often, the alcoholic will not try AA. This is just where the family physician can so often step in. He is the one usually called upon when real trouble starts to loom. After getting the victim sobered up and the family quieted down, he can frankly tell the alcoholic what ails him. He can do the same thing for his patients that Carl Jung did for Mr. R. and that Dr. Silkworth did for me. This is to make it clear to the reluctant drunk that he has contracted a progressive and often fatal malady, that he can't get well by himself, that he needs lots of help. Since a great deal is today known about the emotional and metabolic deficiencies of the alcoholic, family physicians can document their presentation in a far more convincing manner than could our early pioneer doctors. It is very gratifying to know that today the subject of alcoholism is being taught in many of our medical schools. In any case, the facts about alcoholism are easy to obtain. Organizations like the National Council on Alcoholism, the Yale School of Alcoholic Studies, and since 1962, the Rutgers School of Alcohol Studies, plus innumerable state rehabilitation and clinical efforts are ready sources of helpful knowledge. So on, the family physician can, as we say in AA, soften up the drunk so that he will be willing to take a look at our fellowship. Or if he balks at AA, he may be directed to a clinic, a psychiatrist, or an understanding pastor. At this stage, the main thing is that he recognizes his illness and that he starts to do something about it. If the family physician's job is carefully done, the results are often immediate. If the first attempt doesn't work, the chances are better than even that persistent and successive approaches will bring results. These simple procedures do not rob the family physician of much time, nor will they necessarily be hard on the patient's pocketbook. A concerted effort of this sort by family physicians everywhere could not fail to achieve immense results. In fact, the effect of the family physician's work of this sort has already been great. And for this, I would like to set on our record the very special thanks of AA to them. Now we come to the specialist, usually the psychiatrist. I'm glad to say that psychiatrists in great numbers are referring alcoholics to AA, even psychiatrists who more or less specialize on alcoholics. Their understanding of alcoholics is now great. Their patience and their tolerance of us and of AA have been monumental. In 1949, for example, the American Psychiatric Association allowed me to read a paper on AA before a section of its annual meeting. As these doctors specialize in emotional disorders, and alcoholism is certainly one of them, this act of theirs has always seemed to me a wonderful example of fine humility and generosity. The reprints of even that one paper have had a vast effect worldwide. I'm sure that we AAs have never been sufficiently appreciative of all of this. It used to be the fashion among some of us in AA to decry psychiatry, even medical aid of any description, save that barely needed for sobering up. We pointed to the failures of psychiatry and of religion. We were apt to thump our chests and exclaim, "Look at us, we can do it, but they can't." It is therefore with great relief that I can report this to be a vanishing attitude. Thoughtful AA members everywhere realize that psychiatrists and physicians helped to bring our society into being in the first place, and have held up our hands ever since. We also realize that the discoveries of the psychiatrist and the biochemist have vast implications for us alcoholics. Indeed, these discoveries are today far more than implications. Your president and other pioneers in and outside your society have been achieving notable results for a long time, many of their patients having made good recoveries without any AA at all. It should here be noted that some of the recovery methods employed outside AA are quite in contradiction to AA principles and practice. Nevertheless, we of AA ought to applaud the fact that certain of these efforts are meeting with increasing success. We know, too, that psychiatry can often release the big neurotic overhang from which many of us suffer after AA has sobered us. We know the psychiatrist has sent us innumerable alcoholics who would never otherwise approach AA, and many clinics have done likewise. We clearly see that by pooling our resources, we can do together what could never be accomplished in separation or in short-sighted criticism and in competition. Therefore, I would like to make a pledge to the whole medical fraternity that AA will always stand ready to cooperate, that AA will never trespass upon medicine, that our members who feel the call will increasingly help in those great enterprises of education, rehabilitation, and research, which are now going forward with such promise. So menacing is the growing specter of alcoholism that nothing short of the total resources of society can hope to vanquish, or much lessen the strength of our very dangerous adversary, John Barleycorn. The subtlety and power of the alcoholic's malady is revealed on every page of mankind's history, and never so starkly and so destructively as in this century. When our combined understanding and knowledge have been fully massed and applied, we of AA know that we shall find our friends of medicine in the very front rank, just where so many of you are already standing today. When such an array of benign and cooperative action is in full readiness, it can and will surely be a great tomorrow for that vast host of men who suffer from alcoholism and from all its dark and baleful consequences. Following is a statement on alcoholism from the House of Delegates to the American Medical Association, 1971. The American Medical Association identifies alcoholism as a complex disease with biological, psychological, and sociological components and recognizes medicine's responsibility in behalf of affected persons. The association recognizes that there are multiple forms of alcoholism and that each patient should be evaluated and treated in an individualized and comprehensive manner.